Jeremy here. Just before we get into the show, wanted to give an update. We have a new tier on our Patreon. That is the Sheikah supporter tier. For $5 or more a month, you get a week early access to episodes, as well as getting to pick games that you play alongside us. Each month, people in this tier can pick a game that we'll play. We'll stream it on our Discord for everyone else to see. And it's been a lot of fun. We just played the Rogue Hero Ruins of Tassos game, which is this roguelike, Zelda-like game that is very similar to the old Four Swords games. It's very chaotic. It's very, very fun. If you want to join up in that, go to patreon.com/chatofthewild. If you can't afford that, we do still have the smaller tier. Just a reminder, people that join in that tier, they get ad-free episodes. They also get access to our side quests episodes, where once a month we record an episode just talking about all the other games that we have been playing. You also get to pick the games that we play in between Zelda games, what we call our Gaiden games, as well as getting a shout-out. If that sounds good to you, once again, go to patreon.com/chatofthewild. Sign up, support us. We really appreciate it. Anyways, that's all I have, so let's get on with the show.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
New this April from HyperX, it's the HyperX Clutch Controller. Get better control of your mobile gaming with its comfortable grip, directional pad, analog sticks, and shoulder buttons. This versatile controller can fit a variety of phone widths and can also connect wirelessly for use on tablets and PCs. Learn more and pick one up online at HyperXandHP.com, Amazon, Micro Center, Target, Best Buy, and other fine retailers.
Chat of the Wild is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. To find out more information and other great shows, go to podcast.hyperx.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chat of the Wild. This is a bonus episode doing something that we have put off for a while. We'll consider this the first of a few catch-up episodes that we've been needing to do for a while, just covering some things, some Zelda spinoffs. We don't really do Zelda spinoffs so far on here. I think that's one of the reasons why we haven't covered a lot of these things. Like when our format is that we do a mainline Zelda, and then we do something that's similar to a Zelda, and then we go back and forth on there.
There's so much Zelda.
There is, and we do plan on covering all of it eventually. But in this episode, we're going to be talking about Hyrule Warriors: Age of Calamity. I'm your host, Jeremy Harvey. With me, we've got Brian, Luigi's Apartment Hour.
Oh boy.
And from the podcast Impossible Coin, Tegan Somerset.
Hi, y'all.
Welcome back, Tegan.
Hi, Tegan.
It's good to be back.
Before we get into it, tell some people about Impossible Coin.
Impossible Coin is a podcast about video games. We cover general video games and video game news. We don't focus on any one specific genre. It's just whatever we like to play. So it's very fun. I'm doing a playthrough of Horizon Forbidden West right now. Rocky's playing through Project Triangle Strategy. And Brian is investigating the Intellivision Amico.
That has been my favorite thing jumping into your podcast, is hearing him rant about the incredulous things that are happening with that. Like,
it's
there's
so
many
beautiful
stuff so bad, and you're just like, this is a scam.
It's a scam
in action. We are in the middle of a scam.
We're watching this, and it was so funny because a while ago Tommy Tallarico like tweeted, oh, don't worry, Netflix was filming outside of my house, and we were like, oh really, they are. You absolute buffoon.
Oh, yeah, I hung out with you guys during the Game Awards and watched that. And like, I brought it up cheekily to be like, oh, you know, the Intellivision Amico, blah, blah, blah. And Brian, like, if we had been in the same room, it had been like he grabbed me by the cup and he was like, do you want to talk about that right now? And Yes, I do. I didn't know I would get this reaction. Let's dish. Tommy Tallarico is a terrible human being.
It's so good. Like, when Brian gets fired up about stuff like that, it's very, very fun to just wind him up and watch him go.
You guys get to say things I wish I could say on our shows, but we try and keep it kind of clean and
also
stuff.
It just wouldn't relate. It just would not relate to what we're doing. Like, we're just going to be talking about, like, so then Link got the new bow and arrow, and you're like, oh, bow and arrow, that reminds me of this thing with the Intellivision.
And
like,
Brian,
no, I'm cutting this.
The injustice behind, it's so funny, though.
Speaking of evil monsters.
Yeah,
exactly. Speaking of evil monsters, Ganon.
Before we get into talking about the game, though, since Tegan was last on here, which was after we finally got a trailer, follow-up trailer for Breath of the Wild 2 Electric Boogaloo. We got a 5-second clip after an apology for the delay. In this, we see someone that has the face of a Link that we know, but everything else about him is not the Link that we necessarily know from Breath of the Wild. Who knows? We don't know anything else beyond that. He pulls a sword out. It looks like a Master Sword that we knew, but not the Master Sword that we knew, because it's got some weird gunk on it, and it's broken, and he's in front of a thing. We don't know what it is. That's
Sphere
how vague
of light
this was.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tegan, just I need you. What is this? Explain it
how,
all. Tell us
how
all
many
all your
things.
Theories.
Am I allowed to talk about Skyward Sword this time?
Yeah, go for it.
You can say no, it's okay. My initial my initial analysis of the exact 2 seconds of footage that we got are the gunk that's on the Master Sword looks like the same material that the Sheikah Shrines are made out of in Breath of the Wild, number one. Number two, we haven't had Breath of the Wild Link doesn't get that same Triforce effect that Zelda gets in Breath of the Wild. So Link actually being chosen by the Triforce of Courage, possibly somewhere in the in-between or in this particular like game. Very, very good. Chef's kiss. Fee? Fridge? Fee okay? Question mark? We don't know. And yes. Oh, also the Sphere of Light thing that they're in front of, it reminds me of something from Twilight Princess.
Okay.
It reminds me of the Spirits of Light in Twilight Princess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what it reminded me of. And that combined with, like, the markings on his arm, which are definitely reminiscent of the Mirror of Twilight. Like, that portal that it summons.
Yeah.
Like, it's giving me very much, like, the Dark Interloper vibes.
I had thrown out the theory before that the Link would possibly this was going along with the idea that you could play as Zelda or Link, where Link would get the magic hand that gives him certain powers, while Zelda would rely on more grounded weapons and items and gear and things like that, where along the way Link is going to learn new abilities through the magic hand. And it's possible that that's what we're seeing here, because this guy that we saw that was possibly Link, past Link, who knows, whatever, he had that hand. And it was the same style of hand that was holding the weird mummified guy that we saw in the very first trailer. That we assumed
dehydrated Ganon.
Dehydrated, sexy Ganon.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I still, what I saw from this still kind of holds my theory to that, where we're going to be going far away from the old, at least Link will be moving away from the dated weapons that he would get, of the weapons of power or whatever you want to call them, like the items that you would get along the way, where everything is going to be in this arm that he's going to just gain new abilities through his magic arm.
Mm. I just like that. I think they scientifically figured out the point at which people's eyes would start to glaze over with the footage we've already seen, and that's when they stuck in the 5 seconds of new stuff, to where you're like, you don't even recognize that it's there until like halfway, till it's basically over, and like, oh, that was new, hold on, I gotta go back.
I skipped this video when it first came out, because I thought I was just like, oh, it's just an apology video, how did this get summarized? And then I saw a random picture and I was like, what is this? This has not been seen before. And I had to go back and watch and be like, oh, Oh, wait, that was it. Okay, never mind.
Okay, okay.
I was looking at it and I was like, oh, okay, like, is there anything? I was watching intently. As soon as they were like, we're sorry, we have to delay. And I was like, I knew that. I knew that the day that you announced that Pokemon was coming out for holiday. Like, obviously you're delaying it. You're not competing with your own franchise. I get it. And so I was looking for whatever the new thing was. And as soon as it happened, I was like, screenshot, 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 screenshot.
Yeah, I mean, I was too. But by the time he's flying into the air and you know,
wiggling up through the ground,
right?
Yeah,
yeah, I'm like, all right, we're not really getting anything here, and that's when it happened.
2 whole seconds.
Yeah. Also, very exciting. You know, I'm gonna go ahead and say, hey, I was right. Spring 23. So points for Brian. Step in time.
We'll see.
Here's the thing. Spring 23, right, is going to be exactly six years after Breath of the Wild originally came out, right? Mm-hmm. March 3rd is also a Friday and will be the exact 6 years since Breath of the Wild was released. So that's where my money is. Blank. There March 3rd.
We need to see more from this game before we can do it. Like, the fact that they had barely anything to show us in this update.
They don't want to show us anything.
They don't want to. Yeah, it feels like they're using same assets, the same engine. Like, they didn't have to rebuild those things in order for this to happen. Brian on our show thinks that this delay in particular is signaling that a more powerful Switch will be coming out.
Everyone's saying that, but everyone has been saying
that. It doesn't feel like it. So,
yeah. We literally can't. You cannot get a PlayStation 5 still. Like, it is still, like, you can, you know, but it still is a challenge to buy the new systems that have been out for a year. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it is ridiculous how far we are in to this, like, new generation, and it's still hard to get, where there was possibly a chance that Nintendo had it in their plans to release a new updated Switch a year or two ago, but they were not able to do that, and since that, then we got the OLED. We just got a nicer screen, and that was it. They still kept everything the same. Nothing's changed. So they still have to put in these requisitions way ahead of time, and they cannot do it. So the idea that we are even going to hear anything about a next gen Switch within the next year is ridiculous to me. Like, I think that the idea that these things somehow go hand in hand at this point has gotten out of control. I think maybe it's possible that they did have some things that they were working on with better hardware, but then they had to scale it back. Things changed during production where they were like, okay, we have to scale some things back. And knowing how the first game was done, through this process, they discover a new thing, and then they just reset the whole game to be like, let's focus on this thing here. Let's add this mechanic into every single thing that we can now. And so I really hope people start getting away from this connection. Because people are just like, oh, this will be like Twilight Princess or like the first Breath of the Wild was. I'm like, to me, this is going to be like Skyward Sword. This is going to come out at the tail end of the lifespan of a system, but it's not going to be the last game, and it's not going to be a bridge game to the next system either.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, especially with if there was supposed to be a stronger Switch release 2 or 3 years into the life cycle, that's the beginning of the pandemic. Like, it's not happening between the chip shortages for everything else and just the general state of the global trade networks. Like, it's not happening.
We still have another year or two before we can start to level out on the chip shortage, because they're building new factories all over the world to compensate for this. And that is something that is an initiative that, like, here in our country wasn't started until like last year. And then in some other countries about a year and a half ago. And that still takes a lot of time. That still takes a few years to get the stuff up and running to get those trade routes also rerouted to these new facilities. Like, I work in logistics. I understand. Brian also has a hand in this kind of stuff. He understands this stuff as well, where, like, you can't just say we need more of this product and then tomorrow we'll have more of this product. That starts a conversation to say, what do we do to increase how much of this product that we can get? Mm-hmm. And you have every major technology out there vying for this type of material to create their own chips for things. And the thing is, video games are very low on that. Cars and phones are the highest things. We have not gotten a new jump in iPhone. We are not seeing any crazy leap in cars right now. And mm-hmm. until we
people
see
aren't
that,
buying cars either.
People are not right. buying. Like, it is a bad situation all around for that.
Again, but, you know.
Yeah. And so, honestly, until we see a crazy new technology for phones, we're not going to be seeing much for commercial home consoles.
Well, mm-hmm. and the parity between the Switch and other systems is becoming less and less of an issue, because you can just get, you know, older games, put them on the Switch. People will play anything on the Switch. I don't know. Like, I think it's got more life in it, and Nintendo can figure out a way to do it.
It's still the best-selling system. Yeah, it's still the best-selling system. Right. Why would they worry about it?
I don't think that they'd be releasing like Pokemon at the tail end of the system's life cycle, mm-hmm. or like Splatoon 3 at the tail end of the system's mm-hmm. life cycle. They'd move those things to the next system.
Right.
We're not seeing enough Kirby games yet to signify the end of a console. we need at least 3 Kirby games a year for 2 years before it's the end of that.
That's
console.
The signal. That's it right there. The other thing is like, we can go back to the 80s and the chip shortage then, which, you know, people like to say was manufactured by Nintendo. And I'm sure to a certain extent, there's some truth to that. Yamauchi was a bastard. But the way that Nintendo did business with, you know, they manufactured everything themselves. And so you had to put it in order 6 months ahead of time. And if you didn't necessarily know whether your game was going to be like the biggest thing in the world, and if it was, and you only ordered 500,000 carts, well, too bad. You'll have to wait another 6 months. Like, that sort of thing, coupled with the chip shortage, we're seeing a lot of that now, to where during the pandemic, we were telling our customers for a product that a lot of people were using for safety in the pandemic, you're going to have to order that in like 9 months in advance. And some people would laugh and not believe us, and then call us 6 months later and be like, I really can't find anything. And we're like, yeah, we told you 6 months ago, you'd have it in mm-hmm. 3 months from now. Like, if
you had put in an order,
it's that bad. So, mm-hmm. so with the chip mm-hmm. shortage, yeah, like, they're not even going to think about doing a new one. Just the Switch can keep going. It'll be fine. They'll be fine.
It's been fine.
It's going to be fine.
I'm still playing mine every single day, and I've got a PS5 and an Xbox Series X.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've got all the new fancy stuff, and I'm like, I still just want to go, and I'm playing Xenoblade Chronicles, a Wii game, on my Switch right now, and I'm having a great time. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're not in a position that it's needed, because I think you can just reflect on how I know a number of people that got a PS5 and have sold their PS5 mm-hmm. because they're just like, I don't know why I got this system right now. There's nothing to play on it.
Yeah,
like,
they're really,
unfortunately,
there really
yeah,
is.
I could name 3 or 4 games that are exclusive to it, and they're all really good games. They're not worth fighting over people to try to get this, you know, $500 system,
mm-hmm.
spending $70 on games to get a hold of these things right now, especially because there's so many other great games out there. Mm-hmm. It's not even a knock against those games necessarily. It's just there's so many other great games in there that you can play on your PS4 and your Xbox One or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you can play all those games on there. You don't need a new system right now. And Nintendo, I think, knows that. I mean, Nintendo is smarter than all of us when it comes to this stuff. Every once in a while, they get a brain fart and they do a Wii U.
I will mm-hmm. always say this is it's always video game hubris. You get too on top for too long, you fumble.
Right, but they're still riding this. Like, there is a chance. I'm more worried about the Switch 2 than I am about, like, them still having faith in the Switch. Like, mm-hmm. it is a smart move to keep going with the Switch right now.
It's got everything but a microphone, thankfully. And so, you know, it can pretty much serve any purpose they need it to. They can make mm-hmm. anything
it's
they want.
It's covered everything.
They can make anything they want with it.
Anyway, any other things we want to say about this 5-second clip that we saw?
Great haircut, Aonuma. I like his haircut. Good haircut. More than I like his games. So,
the last thing I have is like, have you guys heard the rumored name? Supposedly,
it originated from a fan site. Like, it's not.
Right. Yeah.
It's not. I don't
The faux rumored name for people who don't know is Breath of the Wild Age of Duality. And it's like, no. That doesn't even like
That's the name?
That's the leaked name. That's the supposedly leaked name. I don't know. That doesn't even follow like normal Zelda naming convention.
But it's like the Edge of Duality. The Blade.
That is a sword you can get in Breath of the Wild,
that doesn't give anything away. Like what it, like when they said, oh, the name will give it away. What does that give away?
Look up John Cartwright doing a video about how easy it is to pose as a Nintendo insider.
Right.
Okay.
I'm gonna pose as a Nintendo insider. I probably know more about the Legend of Zelda timeline than they do.
You know the correct timeline. So yeah.
Obviously.
Well, that's your fault because Nintendo doesn't follow the timeline. Like you're not gonna actually be able to predict stuff correctly because you think it has to they morph the timeline every time.
Right. I walk into Nintendo headquarters. I am rolling a very large whiteboard behind me. It's covered in red string.
As you're dressed as Crash Bandicoot.
Right. Exactly.
Speaking of timelines,
Hyrule Wars: Age of Calamity. This was a game that came out in 2020. This was it was a follow-up to two different games. One, the Hyrule Warriors game, and Breath of the Wild. It was a tease, you know, when it first showed up, right? Like, we had a trailer that popped up probably during, like, it was during a direct, whether that was at E3, I can't remember. But we get this video showing up where we're just like, more Breath of the Wild? And then you see
new DLC, maybe?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We see Omega Force getting connected to this stuff, and some of the internet is just like, oh, man. But then me and some of the internet is just like, yes, more Hyrule Warriors. So we're just going to talk about the gameplay right now before the break. So this is what is called a Musou game is how it's referred to. This is a lot of people in the States are, you know, English speakers will just refer to it as like a Warriors game. It started from the Dynasty Warriors series that had you being one person fighting an entire army of people, and with a single slash of a sword, you could hit 20 people that would fly into the air and that could possibly kill them. And you're just taking on these huge swarms of enemies. We did get the Hyrule Warriors game a few years back that originally came out on the Wii U. Then they did a version on the 3DS, which you had to have the new 3DS to play. And then they ported it to the Switch with everything on there. We're not going to talk much about the game. I love that game. We will do an episode in the future about that game. But for this, also, Brian didn't play that. So,
Well, I mean, I played it for like a couple hours and I was like, this is either gonna like completely suck me in or I'm gonna bounce off of it, and I ended up bouncing off of it.
Speaking of playtime, Tegan, what do you know your playtime for Age of Calamity?
It's like 36 hours. I played it all. Yeah, I played it. I did like a once like partway through, and then my fiance and I played it together.
Okay, I'm at 58 hours, and I have not completed the story DLC. I did the first two batches of DLC. I'm still working through that.
You have to open it for to tell me.
Yeah, you have to open the game and then go to like try to save another game. That's fine. You can see that. I'm gonna talk about it. Honestly, your playtime is surprising to me. It was a great pickup and just do a round with the sound off while I'm talking to my girlfriend or something. Like, I could just chip away and slash at bokoblins, and it was a lot of fun.
See, I had to pay attention because I didn't, especially when I first played Hyrule Warriors, I just didn't understand the Musou game. Like, I had never played a Dynasty Warriors game. I had watched like a friend's roommate play some Dynasty Warrior games on like PS2. Like I'd come hang out and be like, that I didn't know it was Romance of the Three Kingdoms, but the story I was hearing, I was just like, this is awesome. And I'm totally in for the story. I don't care about this gameplay whatsoever.
And I'm literally the opposite. Fair. I didn't care about the story, but I love the gameplay. And I never got into those. I played quite a bit of one of the Gundam Warriors games that came out, and I didn't even care about Gundam, but just fighting as giant robots in space made more sense to me than fighting as old, you know, warriors in, you know, a time that I just don't have any interest in.
65 Brian, hours or more.
Oh, so you have the most hours of us.
Yeah,
I was streaming it. The makeup Wheel of Doom gets thrown in, and all of a sudden you're playing with tiny hands while
how many failures are with that? Right?
Yeah, so, you know. Also, I take forever to play games. We all know this. I'm a slow runner.
Well, I'm like, mine's just like, I've played the whole game, but like my playtime is just, that's my solo time because we played it as a duo on the other Switch. So like, I don't know how long we spent. Oh my goodness. As someone who has played the game in the split screen, like on the TV mode, it is a nightmare. It is bad. What happens is like both of your like special moves will be going off and the Switch will start chugging along really badly. Frames are
dropped. Doesn't take two people to do that.
Well, yeah, that's true. But like it's a nightmare when you're trying to do it with two people.
Yeah,
it's
right,
exceptionally frustrating because then all of a sudden like you're starting one thing and the other person's frames are dropping and it turns out that they've actually launched the enemy way out of where you thought they were going to be. And so you're using your special move on nothing.
Right. I did that in Clash Royale all the time.
My cat is here.
Hi, kitty. So, yeah, this game, we have, I want to say, 18 different characters that you can pick from.
Okay.
All related to the Breath of the Wild. This is not like with the first game where they brought in characters from all different games. Every one of these characters has a connection to Breath of the Wild. There are a number of original characters, some versions of characters that we hadn't seen, like with Impa, where the version of Impa that we saw in the Breath of the Wild was a wizened old version of her, and we get to play as young Impa in this one, and she is a springy young lad that can duplicate herself and launch those duplicates at people. You know, spoiler, she's one of my favorite characters to play as.
Spoiler, she's the best character in the game. Yeah.
Spoiler, she's very fun.
Yeah,
she's fantastic.
Impa is my S tier character.
But Mipha though.
I mean, Mipha's cool. I actually do really like playing as Mipha. But like Impa, like Hes2 is maybe a close second. Mm-hmm. It's just a joy.
Weirdly enough, Zelda with the Sheikah Slate is one of my least favorites. There's something about like the way that her moves change so drastically because like so each of these games you have the same kind of combo button presses. It's either small attack, big attack, and you do a combination of those to do different things. And the best things about these warrior games is that you get a number of characters that all play wildly different from each other. But it really just comes down to figuring out which patterns help in which situations, where some of them are better for clearing around you. Some are better for focusing heavy attacks on something straight in front of you. It's really just learning those each time. They each all have a couple different special attacks too, depending on like some of them will like you can charge up a thing that you can unleash, and then others have it where you just build up a meter and then you unleash that meter. Everyone has this, that you unleash the meter and does some big attack.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to give too many examples of which character does what because we'll get into spoilers, but like
we'll do spoilers near the end of this episode, so if you're worried about that.
But your special attack, there's someone that you can sometimes it'll trigger a special attack, but there's another person that like if you just press the special attack button as you're doing a normal attack, it will make that special attack even stronger. And just little things like that are different for each person. You almost kind of want to, you know, go, you know, two or three or four campaign missions with them before you figure out if you like them or not, or if they're
one person that you're gonna like continue using all the time and then, not.
Mm-hmm. Depending on who they are, you know, just throw them to the side and be like, no, I don't really like playing as you.
Right. It's just like, oh, I need to level you up. So let's see. Maybe I'll bring you on as a third character for this one that I'll never switch to, or I'll just go over to the army base and level you up that way.
The best character to play as is, of course, Link.
Yes, that was
just Link. He's the best one. He's in every mission. It's perfect.
Also, he has the biggest variety of weapons of anybody. Right. So even in his, you have 5 different play styles at least, I think.
Two-handed, one-handed, and spears, and
that's not including the DLC, which added
which I haven't played any of that.
It's not a spoiler for the DLC, I don't think. You get some Sheikah weapons. There's one that is basically like almost like a dual hand whip kind of thing.
Ooh.
Where you're using the Guardians. You basically have like their arms in your hands that you'd like do like dual whips with, and it's pretty cool. And they bring the motorcycle in as well as a weapon. So like that's really cool. You can only really do that with Link. Zelda gets an alternate form, and then I believe she gets another thing with the DLC. I think I can't remember on that one.
It's good that she gets an alternate form, because the first one is not good.
No.
It's fine, but like in that way where it's really not fine.
Yeah. No, and even her alternate form is still just like a weird one to control.
It's really strange, but you unlock it as part of the story, but I had someone in the chat, because I played basically this entire game on stream, and someone was like, oh, use your amiibos, like get your amiibos out and stuff. And I was like, oh, cool. All right. And then it just happened to drop one of her special weapons that get unlocked later, and I kind of sat there stunned with stunned face for about 20 seconds on the stream, and I'm like, is this what I think it is? And
you're like, this isn't a Sheikah slate.
This is definitely not something I'm supposed to have right now, but I liked it way more.
Yeah, for sure. Great thing about this game that I, as someone who, you know, when Breath of the Wild came out, I mean, as all three of us, when Breath of the Wild came out, we were obsessed with Breath of the Wild. And then this game comes out and you're just sort of like, this isn't Breath of the Wild. But then you open the map and it's like, oh, that's the Breath of the Wild map. And it's just really cool to have everything like the markers and all of this stuff carry over into this and just still feel like it meshes with it perfectly, right?
It's like, also really nice to be able to see some of these places that we're familiar with from Breath of the Wild in their non-ruined state.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That was what I was most excited
about.
That's
also very fun.
Yeah. I thought, you know, not knowing how the game was going to work, I thought maybe I would get to run around more of the world than you really are able to. And for whatever reason, just the maps themselves don't, like, I don't feel like I'm in a space that I've, you know, lived in for over 700 to 800 hours as I have.
Right.
I thought that's something that's always struck me as odd about it, is that I don't like recognize where I am. You know, not just like some of the places are ruined and stuff, but I thought I would be like more familiar with the world.
I would say it is one of its biggest failures that you can't climb, that you can't glide. Those were two.
Can glide.
You
sort
can
of.
Glide as sort of a, if you happen to be in the air and pressing a series of buttons that you never remember because they're not actually important.
You're in the middle of button mashing and backing away from a bad guy, and all of a sudden you're up in the air and you're like,
what am I doing?
This is good though. This is good. I can use this.
But a temporary tactical advantage.
But no, you can't climb. And that is like a key part of Breath of the Wild. And that is where this game almost feels like it's just in its skin alone. And that's it. And in a lot of ways it is. Even in its storytelling, it's fan fiction. And we'll get to that.
It's not just fan fiction. It's fix specifically. It's very specifically fix it fic.
And we will get further into that in a little bit. But yeah, I still love this game. I love this it's just addictive to me. Being able to just like play a game where I can just at a glance be like, oh, I need to turn the red thing blue. That's like the gameplay. Like at any time, every once in a while, they throw in something where I fail because I'm like, oh, I was supposed to protect this thing. Well, why wasn't it a different color? Like, why? Like, it should be a different color to tell me that. It
should be purple.
Yes, there should be something on there. But for the most part, I can go in, I can fight swarms of many enemies, I can power up. It has the ultimate power fantasy that I love in these games. Right from the get-go, you are super powerful of being able to swing a sword and take out 20 enemies, as I said. And you only get stronger from there. And I love that. I just love that so much. It just feels so good to me. And I get every criticism of this game. I get people that don't like this style of game, that it doesn't feel as rewarding to them as other things, because there is no real, there's light exploration. You can find the Koroks.
Yeah.
Collect seeds.
Mm-hmm.
That took me a while to realize. And then I was like, I don't know if I'm going to go back to, I already spent 65 hours on the game and I didn't really repeat a whole lot of missions unless I really needed a resource to unlock a part of the map. Like, oh, there's a bunch of Octoroks here. I need Octoroks, so I'll do this.
Yeah, there are things that you can get that make it where the Korok seeds pop up on the map, where treasure chests pop up on the map.
Yeah.
You eventually get those to help you 100% the game. It's not necessary because it does the same thing that it did in Breath of the Wild, where it expands out your weapon slots. So, although there's a couple other things here and there where they'll be like, yeah, we'll give you weapon slots, or we'll give you an upgrade to this thing here for everybody. But for the most part, they are just used to give you more weapon slots for things.
There's even another resource you can find after you've completed the main story. If you go back and play, there's like pieces of a thing you can find, and I won't say what it is. It'll get you your nice Marvel post-credit scene.
Yes, we do have all of that too, and we'll talk about that. This is going to be an episode covering everything. This game, as far as we know, is complete. They put out all the DLC. So if you're worried about story stuff, later on we'll tell you we're going to talk spoilers, so don't worry about that. You can hang tight for now and still listen to us rant.
This game actually does a really good... I found that when I played a lot of this, I played like 20 hours of this, and then I went back to Breath of the Wild. The big enemies do the same attacks. Attack in the same way. Your battle tactics are completely different for this game. The way that you break them or break their shield or do massive damage to them is completely different, but they attack the same way. And, you still do, the dodge the same way. And so I noticed that this game really made me think about Breath of the Wild fights in a different way, and also helped me recognize enemy movements before, enemy tells before they do a certain strike in a very, Souls-like fashion, than a way that I never noticed before playing Breath of the Wild. And I thought that was really cool that, it's completely different, but the enemies still attack the same way.
Right. I feel like we've covered the gameplay of this. You go from level to level, you fight swarms of enemies,
you level up your weapons, you level
pick
up
drops and craft stuff,
you can add attributes and crap to your weapons and take them into battle.
You unlock stuff on the map that helps you later.
You get to go hang out in places before they're destroyed. It's kind of cool.
It's a great checkbox game too. Like the way that they give you, like you can find something in the UI that will list off things for you to do. They give you the thing of like, you can put a sensor on there that if you need a specific part, then it'll be like, play one of these levels and you'll find this part. And then you'll be in the middle of playing it and you'll get a pop-up and be like, you got enough things for this. And you're like, yay, that feels good. I'll craft that. It unlocks this. And you're just constantly, leveling things up and opening up new things. I think this game's great. I don't know how do you guys feel about the gameplay overall with it?
As a Zelda game, it's not a good Zelda
game. No, it's not a Zelda game.
As a Warriors Musou game, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. I almost wish this was on like the PlayStation or the Xbox, just because I feel like it'd be able to handle it a little bit better. Like,
yeah.
With all the stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. But I'm not mad about it. I think the Fire Emblem Warriors game, we didn't have as many problems as I had with the Zelda game, like gameplay wise.
Well, I mean, this game.
Yeah, in the co-op specifically.
This game does run worse than the first Hyrule Warriors.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
That is being based on a Wii U game. So it sucks that in a lot of ways it is a downgrade, where I prefer the visuals of the first Hyrule Warriors.
Right. It's like they turned up everything to be like, oh, it's so cool. And it's just like, you know, it's a Breath of the Wild world, so it's got to be better. And by making everything better, they actually made the game overall worse.
Let's chop the draw distance down by half.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Don't get me started on draw distance in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I mean, it already wasn't great in Breath of the Wild, and then this one is worse.
Yeah,
because they put more enemies on there. But it's just fun for me. It's just
it's a fun game. It's a good game to like. I wanna just murder a bunch of stuff and feel really good about it, and not have to worry about like if I have enough arrows on me, and if I sneak around the thing, and if a blood moon is coming. Like, I can just run in, slash a bunch of stuff, feel super powerful, and then like do something else. You know. Right.
I mean, Brian, how do you feel about this overall gameplay?
It's like... fine.
All right.
No, it's good. It's whatever. I enjoyed playing it. I probably wouldn't have played it otherwise. I'll probably play Hyrule Warriors now. I still have it. I'll get my Wii U out.
Okay. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk story and spoilers.
Wee.
Spoilers.
Come on in, take a seat. What are you having? Well, of course I've heard of Hair the Dogcast. That's the podcast that talks about video games and beer. For all of the latest gaming headlines, craft beer reviews, retro games, modern games, series retrospectives, console studies, and on occasion, extremely hungover discussions on the lore of Kingdom Hearts, make sure to check out Hair of the Dogcast, part of the HyperX Podcast Network.
New this April from HyperX, it's the HyperX Clutch Controller. Get better control of your mobile gaming with its comfortable grip, directional pads, analog sticks, and shoulder button. This versatile controller can fit a variety of phone widths and can also connect wirelessly for use on tablets and PCs. Learn more and pick one up online at HyperXandHP.com, Amazon, Micro Center, Target, Best Buy, and many other fine retailers.
SequelCast 2 and Friends looks at movies and video games and franchises, one movie and game at a time. Hosted by Matt Bradley Shurgi, Thrasher, and Alex Miller, been going since 2009, and we're part of the HyperX Podcast Network.
All right, Tegan, I am going to let you take the reins for a bit on this, because this is...
this is bad.
Well, whenever we get you on here, we love having you on because you are such a lore aficionado for the Zelda series.
Thank you.
And
I am very proud of my non-existent knowledge.
Yes,
my encyclopedic knowledge of nothing.
And this game here, it really pitches itself as being an important story. But in the end... it's not at all.
No, this game comes to you and says, hi, this is the canon experience of what happened during the calamity. And then halfway through the game says, just kidding, it's a giant fix-it fic.
Right off the bat, we get it.
We get a Bill and Ted, basically, here.
For sure, yeah.
Where the game basically says, like, we're going to introduce a thing that is going to screw everything up, but in the process of introducing it, actually fixes itself at the end and becomes a net zero.
This is why I hate these warrior games, or like the Fire Emblem mobile game that they made, which the gameplay, you know, was fine. It was scaled down, little RTS tactics battles. I always do that. Scaled down little tactics battles, but it has to make this like, multiverse, you know, storyline to where, ooh, something broke and we have a new hero who comes in from the broken multiverse to like round up the people we all know. And hi, I'm the Prince of Fake Land and I'm here to do that. And so they like they all do that. And so I was really hoping this one wouldn't, but I knew deep down that it would, and it like totally as does.
As soon as you saw that little egg, guardian, so you were like, aha. Stupid.
I was like,
okay, I really hope
that they somehow tie this in to where this doesn't make it an alternate timeline. But like, okay.
The
egg is adorable. The egg guardian is adorable. I'm not saying that. It's also dumb. But however, we have to remember. Here's the thing you have to remember about the Hyrule Warriors games. They take place in an alternate universe. Yes. They're not even on the timeline. Thank God.
I think they look at the timeline.
They look at it and they go,
"This is the first Hyrule Warriors game was it acknowledges the existence of the timeline. Like that is its thing. This one, it doesn't. Again, this is entirely in Breath of the Wild. Like there's nothing really about this game that touches the other Zelda games. I wish it did. I was really hoping that it would. But here's the thing, Brian, when you were first talking about your issues about like bringing in a foreign character, I thought you were going to be like, but they didn't do it this way. Instead, they brought in a foreign villain, which was Astor, which when we first saw him, everyone was just like, oh, is this like some new, or a new version of, some character, like a lot of people were throwing out different characters from other Zelda games, like the villain in Link Between Worlds. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Or Agamemnon.
Yeah, people were theorizing this stuff here. But no, Astor is just like this guy that shows up that is just sort of like, I'm obsessed with Breath of the Wild 2, and I'm going, or Breath of the Wild also. Sorry.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild as well.
And I want to take over it. And so I'm gonna go and control Calamity Ganon. And
That's all it is. And there's a lot of stuff about Astor's design specifically that signals to other people that this should be, I know, a reincarnation of a villain that we've already seen. He's got opinions. My little bean's got opinions about this. Mm-hmm. So, like, we can start with, like, his overall design. The dark cloak, the dark hair, the pale skin. That very much is, like, with the like, jewel design in the front and, like, the red jewel accents. Mm-hmm. Very specifically, that triggers Wind Sorcerer Vaadi memories. Like, that is the Minish Cap villain, sure. Right? Yeah. Yeah. And then we have the specific like Gerudo symbol on the back of his outfit that's also found on both Ruji and what's her name? Urbosa's outfits.
Yeah. Okay.
On their red jewel that they have on their hip.
They both hang out in the desert though.
Yeah, but it's like both of their designs. So then it's like, okay, is this more of like a Gerudo villain that like another like is this a different king that didn't rise because of Calamity Ganon or something like that? Then there's that thing. No. And then, like, you look at the very specific, the diamond patterning on here, and then bringing back when they re-release Skyward Sword, and Girahim is the main villain. It's the same patterning that appears whenever he's teleporting around. And so you're like, oh no, this is Demise's sword reincarnated. No, it's none of those things. It's just a dude.
It's
just a guy.
It's just George Lucas doing the prequels. Like, it's, you know, it's poetry. It's sort of they rhyme. He's just pulling crap out of the old movies make you like feel things, and you're like
something, anything.
They're just pulling references from places. You know,
I am having a flashback when we first had you on TV, and you theorizing a lot of this stuff, or like at least going along with theories that you had heard And I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
That it actually ended up not being any of that.
I fight everything. I'm so mad. This game makes me so mad. Like, it's all the stuff is like right there, you know? They could have really done something. Mm-hmm. Then no, none
they
of
really
it.
Could have just made this like actually
right.
cool. But I wonder if Nintendo wouldn't let them. Like, Nintendo's like, no.
Oh, almost certainly.
You can't, you can't have access to the canon. Now the canon
you
matters.
Can't actually change anything.
But they could have used this as a spot to have like another Ocarina of Time style break, you know? And they were just like, nah, actually,
I think, you know,
no.
Input on it or let right, it in some like, way or, you know, taken over the story of it.
Right. And like an Astor's design specifically, like he's got the jewel eye in his forehead mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And that also makes him look like dehydrated Ganon
yeah.
in the basement in the Breath of the Wild 2 trailers. And like, no, like nothing is going to come of that either.
Nope.
You know, mm-hmm. and he's over here using the Sheikah tech. Like he's got what is essentially like a core for a guardian, an ancient core for a guardian. And he's using it like this cool scrying orb and it's summoning the little like star patterns that you see in some of the shrine. None of this is going to matter. And it makes me so mad.
Does it?
Yeah. A little bit. Well, yeah. The jury is out on whether or not I'm actually mad, but I'm actually mad.
You're very passionate. And that kind of energy can go either way.
Oh, it really does.
So this game, what it does is it just basically pitches this idea of like, we're going to tell you this story mm-hmm. about what happened in the past. Mm-hmm. I changed my mind. Instead, it's this weird time traveling egg yeah. that is going to go and screw up the timeline and you have to fix the timeline.
The egg is woken up at the moment that Zelda finds her power.
Awakens her ceiling power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When she awakens the power in like the Fort Hateno field and when Link is
beefing it.
Yeah. He's just done.
Link
he's done.
Beefs it.
And
he's not dead yet officially. No. He's gotten a killing blow though, 100%.
But it's what sends him to the, you know, the hot tub. So, and
hot tub time machine.
Or just the hot tub rejuvenation machine.
either one,
you know, and he wakes up in 100 years, but that event is what wakes up the egg, and then he whistles the theme song and pops open a portal to the future past or mm-hmm. to before this
the
all started.
Of future past. Mm-hmm. Sure does.
Yeah.
Didn't we spend a lot of time of watching the younger versions of these characters that we have met figure out what the deal with this egg is? And discover things like the towers and all this stuff. There's all these things where I'm just like, I didn't know we were even like needing this. Like we weren't needing this kind of information. It's just,
or that it happened like this.
I mean, but also it didn't happen like
it
that
didn't.
Because the towers don't show up
exactly.
in Breath of the Wild until after Link gets out of the hot tub.
Exactly. Like,
that's the thing. The egg took that information.
The egg knows things.
Got it. They got this. They got the information of what this tower was mm-hmm. earlier, and so you know, 100 years earlier or whatever.
Yep.
And yeah, so we just go through a lot of this stuff. We eventually. This...
It's not even 100 years earlier. It's like 2 years earlier.
Yeah, no, he pops in before
before Link Link isn't in the hot tub. Link isn't in the hot tub. Link is just dying, and this thing zips back like
to before
just
7 months.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah,
oh, man,
just
I'm giving him credit.
Zelda's not 17 yet. That's the whole Zelda's not 17 yet.
We
like
don't
that's
know
how
the,
far back they go back.
We don't know no one's met the Guardians yet. And that's the other thing is that
they have barely chosen the champions.
The champions, not the Guardians. In mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild, Link was the last person added to the squad. Mm-hmm. Like it's very clear when they have their little, hey, you're the champion, you know, like kind of half-assed.
The ceremony memory.
Right.
Yeah.
That where like no one's really feeling it. You can tell that the five of them are like a tight unit and Link's just this guy and none of them really care or trust him. And so, yeah, like when you have to go around with Zelda to meet all of them, I'm just like, this is not how this goes down.
No, because like the other Guardians are chosen first, and then Link awakens the sword, or is like chosen by the sword, or whatever the heck, and like that's when he's added to the squad and elected the princess's royal knight. Not, I do a bunch of murdering during the calamity attack, and now I'm the princess's royal knight, and also I'm the only warrior to never wear a helmet.
But, but Totaka, or whatever the name of the little guy is, I'm just gonna call him Totaka. Because that's
the
another
egg boy.
That's another Nintendo reference. It like knows everything that goes down, or somehow, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just the Wikipedia.
Even though it was in a box when this happens. Also, Calamity goes through the time loop.
Yep,
and it
sure does.
And it knows things.
Yeah,
it knows
Calamity
what happens.
Calamity goes through the time loop, same time as this. And possesses the Turako egg before the Turako egg is woken up.
Right.
So does the future Turako egg know that the past Turako egg has been possessed by Demise? Like, is that a whole thing? Who knows?
Again,
or Calamity Ganon.
Again, Bill and Ted.
Like, well,
I guess no. I hate talking about time travel stuff when it's clear, like, there are some good time travel stories out there, you know? This is not a time travel game, though. It just is sort of the reason why we have certain characters that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just toss this out. Going forward, we're going to be spoiling stuff. Let's put this out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be so excited for this, and then I didn't care immediately afterwards when somehow the future Guardians from Breath of the Wild traveled
the
back
champion
in time.
Descendants, basically.
Yeah, the champion, the future champion. Sorry,
yes.
I keep mixing those two up.
I do.
The future champions go back in time to fight the 100-year-ago champions that we saw as ghosts in Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but like, why?
They fight with them. They don't fight them. They fight with them.
Right.
They fight with them. They show up to, and they are now unlocked.
They keep them
characters.
Alive.
Mm-hmm.
Until Link can get
them,
there.
They keep them alive. Oh, so much is wrong with that compared to what happens in Breath of the Wild. So many things. That order of events is completely incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
First of all. God, I feel like I've pulled out the big board now.
Oh, please.
I have a large conductor rod that I'm using to point. I've got one of those like chalkboards that, like, you know, the chalkboards in like college rooms where it's like one really big chalkboard and the professor can like pull down a smaller chalkboard and then put a, that's what I have going on here. First of all, in Breath of the Wild, the calamity begins when Zelda is coming back from the Spring of Wisdom, right? All of the champions are together with her. She is coming back from the Spring of Wisdom, and that is when everything goes down.
They're at the Lanayru Pass.
Yeah, they're in the Lanayru Pass. Yes, exactly. In this version, all of the champions are already in their home turf on the towers, on the Sheikah Towers, in their home turf, near their divine beasts when everything goes down.
Oh, right there, Salamander buddy. Let's get in there and mess them up.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so it's like there isn't. And, like, Zelda somehow recognizes that, like, oh, all of the Divine Beasts have been possessed. This is a problem. Like, they get that intel on the one Sheikah, the only Sheikah slate that anyone has that works.
Got a walkie-talkie.
It's got a walkie-talkie and a camera function that allows remote access to all of the Divine Beasts, I guess. And also it can teleport, like, between four people and a small army. It's at different points of the storyline.
I forgot about
the small army. And also the entire Divine
army.
Beast. And the Divine Beast.
Five
armies and four Divine Beasts and the champion and the king and the this and the
that's
that.
That's a semantics on that one. But yeah, like the fact that, like, I don't know, the way that the story has to like function. I don't know.
Right.
Sometimes,
like,
it's a little much, but yeah, I'm like,
it's bad.
It's wild. It's crazy. And like Zelda's like, all of my friends are dead, and also my dad is dead. And then it turns out, like, later you find out, oh, her dad isn't dead. It's fine. Which is too bad because he should have been dead anyway. But
you might be able to play as him.
I don't want to play as him. He's a jerk. Anyway, but
then
like
turn into a boat. Why do I care?
He doesn't even turn into a boat. Exactly. He should at least have the decency to turn into a boat.
He's not a good father, so he doesn't know that. So that's why.
Oh, I see. Only good fathers turn into boats.
Someone who's a decent human being would know that he should turn into a boat at this time.
Oh, God. But then we get... Right, honestly. Hey. So then we get, like, mini cutscenes where Link and Zelda and Impa and the egg...
Also, Impa's still here, and she's the best.
She is the best. We go around, and we... help, we come in at like the last possible moment and help defend the champions from the blights that they're supposed to be fighting after they've already been rescued and bought more time from their future,
right?
Like the people who take over their role,
their grandchildren.
Basically,
I mean, they're not all grandchildren. Sidon is her brother.
Sidon's her brother. Yeah. Well,
Rishu's not actually related. I think the only one who's actually related is Yanobo.
Yeah, it's Yanobo.
But yeah, Teba's not even related to.
Okay,
but
I still treat him as all their grandchildren.
I mean, it's the same thing. It'd be like your grandchildren come and save your grandparents from the war
Someone gave you their old scarf and their old blue scarf, and so they all wear a piece of the clothing or something.
They do, and that's how they're identified or whatever.
But like, it is sort of a montage moment because it's split into two different missions. So you'll save two of them, you know, like Mipha and
Daruk first, and then Revali and Urbosa.
Yeah, but you have to, like, once you save one, the mission's not over yet. Like, okay, now we go to this one now. You know, it's very, like,
immediately.
If you want to call me babe. It's just this big montage bull crap.
Video games don't have enough montages.
Dip, 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 dip. You know.
I'm like, don't get me wrong. You kick butt, of course. Of course. Of course, right? You get the sword. The Deku Tree says everything's going to be fine. Don't sweat it.
Here's Hestu.
The warrior.
Here you go.
And then everything is fine. Yeah, and then everything is wonk. And like, it is very nice. The relationships that they establish, that they showcase between the champion, the dead champion, and their future counterpart, very good.
I love that.
Love it.
It's great. I was really happy that they were there. I guess I kind of liked playing as Rishu. Because you get Patricia, the sand seal as well. It wasn't
the
like,
greatest sand seal.
What's that?
It's just pretty great. Like just getting on there and mowing down enemies with that big sand walrus or whatever.
Right, the sand seal. And like the way that Urbosa speaks to Riju.
Yes,
is very good. It's very much like competent mother. Bringing up a strong young woman, like Urbosa never doubts Riju.
Urbosa is just the best character in.
Urbosa is, I mean, yeah, you're not wrong.
I mean, the Gerudos in Breath of the Wild were like some of the best representation of like a different group of individuals in here. In my opinion, almost any Zelda game, just because of like how strong they are and that how they were just like. We don't need help from anybody else, and they know it. Like it's not, true. It's like they have all their stuff taken care of.
They're not just physically strong; they're also like mentally,
like
fortituded against everything that's going that has been going on and will be going on. Like they're the ones best equipped to actually make it out of this. You know.
Also, you know, who wants to really ruin the desert too much?
The Yiga clan, apparently.
I mean, other than that, but you didn't even run into them very much out there. Like, I guess you sometimes run into, like, Lizalfos and, you know, some camps and stuff. But for the most part, desert's pretty empty. It's not empty, though. There's so much to do in the desert. It's great.
There's so much to do in the desert.
But that's Breath of the Wild, sorry. But yeah, Urbosa does even has that dynamic a little bit with Zelda in the memories that we see. So to see like her doing that throughout the game with Riju was really great. And also
it's really consistent.
Urbosa is fantastic to play as in this game.
So fun.
I love her power.
So fast
that like you can charge up the lightning meter and like just stick lightning into your weapon and just go to town on people. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the Yiga clan. We do have to, we got to bring up the fact that we do get to hear more from Master Koga.
Yay!
This time.
Also, my other favorite character in Breath of the
Wild. How is Master Koga alive 1,000 years later?
Oh, no. 100.
100,000 billion years later. Impa 10 is, million Impa, years later.
No, Tegan. Rein it in.
It's true, though. He really shouldn't be there, but
he shouldn't be there. Alternately, he shouldn't be that competent in battle, and he's not even that competent in battle.
No, the issue, we get more Koga than we did in Breath of the Wild, which is good, but also we got too much time with Koga's bodyguards. Focusing so much on his bodyguard being the big, which makes sense. I mean, Koga's a pushover in general. He's a joke. He's a joke character.
I love him though.
I just wanted to hear more antics from him. We do get to play as him later, which is great. You can unlock him as a character. He's fine. He does just wacky moves and stuff like that.
His special though, can just wreck a Lionel.
It really can.
All of a sudden, he just launches a freaking Kamehameha wave, and it's just that's it.
That's true.
I was upset, just to even see that he was here, but because it didn't make any sense. But that was the one I could look past because I'm just I just wanted to hang out with Koga. I love you. Yeah. I love you, Koga.
Koga's cool.
Yeah.
Could use more Koga.
Always.
Absolutely.
I want a Koga game.
But we go through this, and it's still always at the end of, Calamity Ganon is still the thing at the very end that we're going to deal with. Eventually, the egg does get infected, and that becomes a thing. We see, the updated form of that, and then that turns into, a Calamity.
Because Calamity Ganon's been running around with his own egg, which we talked about earlier, but, that's his buddy. And the egg knows things, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yep. The evil egg knows the evil secrets of the future.
It sort of turns into another blight.
Yes. It does. And that ends up being the final. Doesn't that end up being the true final boss is the blighted egg?
What? It's like the first phase of the final fight, practically.
Yeah.
You fight him, the egg, and Aster, and then Aster has this very Chancellor Cole moment where he gets taken over.
He gets two hats.
He gets
Norded.
He gets his two hats. He gets Norded. Yeah. And he gets possessed. And then there's a final version of that where all of that is put together or something into one package.
It turns into a big Calamity Ganon, and the Calamity Ganon that we see in fight in this game is not the Calamity Ganon we see in fight in Breath of the Wild.
It's a different Here's version.
The thing.
It's a different form.
I knew that form did a bad job or something. No, I guess
apparently.
It doesn't know that yet. It doesn't know that, so why am I?
No, and I was just about to say, I don't like Calamity Ganon in Breath of the Wild. Honestly, it was one of the more disappointing things for me in that whole game. That final battle is just not as interesting as it should have been, in my opinion.
Especially
the final battle you do with it is just so boring to me. But that's not what we're here to talk about. But if
you should watch how speedrunners take them out now. It's very interesting the ways that. The more you know about that battle, the weirder and kind of crazier and more fun it gets. But I agree with you. You said a long time ago that open world game final bosses have a way of not living up to the grandiosity of the game that they're in, by the nature of being a sandbox game.
Yeah. And the idea that this game sort of betrayed the original or did something different, I'm just it doesn't matter to me because I didn't think that the battle was great to begin with. So if you're going to do something different, it would have been the most disappointing thing is if they somehow made it the same to me, right? If we went through all of that and we still fought the same phases of Calamity Ganon that we did in Breath of the Wild, we don't. It's different, that's fine. It plays differently because it's a different game anyway.
Then they send four people back to the future.
They do. they send the four people back to the future. And like everyone gets a very nice like parting moment with their champion. And it's great. And my favorite part about their entire thing, other than like Sidon and Mipha being like, we're going to be together. And Sidon being like, our hearts are always connected because we're siblings. Like that was very good. Was Teba being like, I can't believe I learned a lot about the champion of the Rito, and very, very much saying like, I can't believe he's such a jerk without actually saying
it's
that.
It's the Trunks Vegeta thing. And you know, like,
yeah, exactly.
It's like Trunks getting back to his time and like walking to the bowl and being like, why didn't you tell me dad was a prick?
Yeah, right. Exactly. 100% exactly what happened. Just like, wow, this has been, I think he says like, this has been an eye-opening experience. And like that, and then Revali doesn't say anything. He just crosses his arms and he's like,
Revali's the biggest letdown in all of Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm. Revali is such a jerk. It's amazing.
So much potential there, but no growth, nothing.
This time travel episode completely erases, nullifies entirely Revali's growth from what happened when he died to when Link finally shows up to beat Windblight Ganon. And he goes, yeah, actually, you know, you are a good warrior and I am going to give you my power because like you did earn it and like, good for you. Now you do have to like that is for someone with that big of an ego.
He budged an inch and that speaks volumes, I guess.
And he didn't budge at all in this one. He's just like, yeah, no, I am the best. Thanks. What a jerk.
So do these four characters know, where are they going to remember this stuff in Breath of the Wild 2?
I don't know. I have no idea. Are they?
Because technically it would mean that if...
Here's another question. Why didn't Zelda or Link get teleported back? If all of the champions from 100 years in the future got... Why didn't Link...
This is where they're from. I don't know.
It's because they're the main characters or whatever. Because
they're holding the screw, you know.
No, because at this time in this timeline, they hadn't been frozen yet, and they didn't need to be frozen in time 100 years.
But
so they didn't exist 100 years in the future.
But when they summon the future champions, that's from the timeline where Link does get frozen.
Do they know Link?
No, they know Link.
They don't acknowledge whether or not they know Link.
But that's what I'm saying. They don't.
He's in the pool right now, is what she's saying.
He's in the pool.
He's in the jacuzzi.
Literally, he didn't need to get put in the pool.
Well, here's the thing. When you do when all the cutscenes of Link running into the to fight the blights in the Divine Beasts, when all of those cutscenes happen. And it's all from Link's, like, it is shot from Link's point of view. You don't see Link running. You're like, you see the camera bob of Link running.
Mm-hmm.
The look on all of their faces isn't just like relief. It is recognition, but they say nothing.
And maybe they just know about the hero.
Maybe they know that it's Link. Who knows? Nobody knows. It doesn't matter. Why did Link and Zelda come back?
None of this.
Here's all I want to. Here's the last thing I want to say in terms of talking about like timeline stuff.
Yeah.
Late Marvel movies have done it the best, where they acknowledge the existence of the timeline, but also don't hold it so close to their hearts where they have to be like, we have to do all this. They can play around with it and they can be like, oh, these other timelines exist and they do all this, and we're not messing with it. It exists as it is.
Yeah.
We're not trying to define
it. It's the multiverse or whatever.
Yeah. And this one, I just want to hold it as this, where like in my mind, this is its own thing, that these people, they can exist. They exist the way that they do. And I acknowledge it. But also at the same time, I'm not going to pat you on your back because I don't think you did anything special with it.
Yeah.
I think you made a product with those things and it was enjoyable, but you didn't change the mold. You didn't raise the bar. You didn't do all those other terms to talk about doing something great and changing, but you did it, and
genuinely think as a fix it fic in its own storyline, away from canon, this is a great game. It's so fun. It made me laugh a bunch. Like, it was a good time to play. But like, if you try to put this in the canon somewhere, it's just a nightmare. I hope Breath of the Wild 2 does not acknowledge this at all.
I don't think
If I see this little white egg thing anywhere in Breath of the Wild 2, I will burst a blood vessel and have a stroke.
Maybe someone going like, oh, well, you know, I did, you know, just like a nod to it, maybe like a character nodding to it, maybe. But if the egg shows up, I will lose my mind.
The question is, did Aonuma like the egg? That is all it takes.
Oh, God.
If he liked the egg, it's going to be in the game. He will make a point to be like, you got to put that egg in the game because I like the egg.
Absolutely.
And Miyamoto said that that's how it works.
Miyamoto said, I'm the big boy, and I get to say what happens, and I like the egg.
I like the egg. The egg is Kevin.
Egg is my friend.
This is my hard-boiled friend.
God, we have to watch out as if he shows
up. We're naming it Breath of the Wild 2 Egg.
Has he posted any picture at any time of him with, like, a replica of that thing?
I don't think he's not like Kojima. You can't, like, watch his Twitter feed and guess, like, what he's going to do next.
Yeah.
So.
The way I will accept a nod to the egg, okay? This is the way I will accept a nod to the egg without assuming that they're trying to, like, make this in the canon timeline fit in any way, shape, or form, is if there is a guardian, like a full guardian, and it turns white, I'm fine with that. Mm. Like a full guardian, where they're like, oh, look, it's reminiscent of the egg, but it isn't the egg itself. Obviously, it's a different machine. Okay. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
But if they're like, oh, no, you can get the egg out of an EX chest or something, I'm going to lose my entire marbles.
I would like it if you just get it and it just runs away from you.
Yeah.
You get this challenge, this huge challenge taken care of. You open a chest. It's just like you got the egg and you get this scene of it being like, and then it just runs away and you just never see it again.
There you go.
Okay. Maybe.
Well, we do have the extra super ending of doing the Iron Giant thing where you have the one screw that's still alive, and if you find all of his friends, you can rebuild the Iron Giant, and you get a little cutscene. But
yeah, and it's just fun stuff. Like, it doesn't mean anything,
right?
Like, because they've already reset the timeline, so the future stuff happens, whatever.
Yeah,
all of that has been set back, and they just exist in their own little pocket timeline now. And so now they're just like, let's just have fun. Let's do it where you can play as Calamity Ganon now. All right, there you go.
Let's do it. Yeah. Why not?
Yep. Sure.
All that fun stuff. Let's go ahead and wrap this episode up. Do we have any final thoughts that we need to get across on this game? Tegan, I'll let you go first.
Do not try to make it work. It won't work.
Don't make sense of it. Turn your brain off.
Yeah, turn your brain off. Enjoy it for what it is. A Warriors game, where you get to murder a bunch of things. It's super fun if you just think of it like that. But if you're looking at it from like a lore canon perspective, just don't. You'll hurt yourself. And we don't want that.
And those around you.
Yeah.
It's fine. Sure.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Fun. I had fun playing it. You know, and yeah, like I said, I enjoyed the story as I was in it. I would see things that like that makes no sense and that is infuriating, but like, you know, while I'm actually in the story in the moment of it, it's fine, it's fun, and they get to be Hestu, you know, and he's just an adorable little tree. And
Hestu was one of my predictions that I had that I would really like to play in this game, and I got to do it, and it's exactly what I wanted it to be. So that was good.
They even put the DLC monk in here from whatever. But you know, they put some weird stuff in here, and it's fine. Have fun.
It's fine.
It's fine. Just
turn your brain off and have fun.
I still recommend it. I still recommend it for Zelda fans.
I'll still recommend it for Zelda fans, but you just gotta go in knowing it is not like any other Zelda game.
You're not gonna learn anything new.
Yeah.
You're really not.
I haven't played the DLC. Does the motorcycle talk?
I don't think it does.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I don't remember it talking.
I'm someone like, hello, Link. I'm your motorcycle.
Just Knight Rider it.
Yeah, I don't want that. So good.
No, it's just a weapon.
Cool.
Basically. Yeah. Anyway, Tegan, thank you so much for coming on again and talking Zelda with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a good time.
If listeners wanted to find more about you and see you do things, where could they go?
They can go to anywhere that they get their normal podcasts, and they'll just have to look for Impossible Coin. No, like, underscores or spaces or anything. We're also on Twitch. I play on Tuesdays, and Rocky plays on Wednesdays. We play a variety of games.
And that's just Impossible Coin as well?
Yeah, that's just also Impossible Coin. Super easy. No underscores, no spaces, no nothing. Very straightforward.
Check it out. What are you playing right now?
I'm playing Horizon Forbidden West, which is also kind of a Zelda-like, but not.
It's on our list.
Yeah. It's a good one. Recommend it. Big recommend. It is the second in the Horizon franchise, mm-hmm. though, so be warned. And also, I'm like halfway through the game at this point. I think I've played it for like 10
streams.
You've
been going for
now.
A while.
So it was very good. There's a lot going on.
Tegan.
Yeah.
Did you know that there is a Breath of the Wild crowd control?
I have heard that someone is working on a Breath of the Wild crowd control. Is it functional?
I don't know. I saw Linkus, very famous world record holder of GameCube era Zelda games. I saw he was trying to get a crowd control set up this morning, and it sounds like you have to do it on Wii U, and you like need a modded Wii U or something. But okay. But yeah, I Ooh. Want to stream that, because then, you know, crowd control, Jeremy, is what we've got a stretch goal for that. Randomizer or crowd control, where people can just throw, you know, currency at a thing to like take all of our money away or our arrows away or stuff like that. So yeah.
So I have seen randomizers for Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask that have been hilarious. Mm.
So yeah, that's I'm pretty sure the randomizer is probably not far away if they figured out a way to get crowd control on Wii U. So
nice.
I'm excited.
Brian, you got anything to plug? I know you're not streaming right now, you're still on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter at Luigi's Apartment, and Need for Speedrunning is at NF Speedrunning. Also, it's a podcast. You can listen to it on all the podcast players. Need for Speedrunning.
And you were recently on a podcast.
I was on Less Than 2000 to talk about my history with Zelda 1, or just Zelda 1 and why it's so damn good.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. Those guys are great. They do a fun show of just like pre the year 2000 pop culture stuff, and they're all over the place with it. It's not just like, you know, nerdy video game stuff. They'll talk about an album or a movie. They have a Homeward Bound episode. It's pretty funny. It's a good show.
Check all that stuff out. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Tegan. Thank you, Brian.
Yay.
We will talk to you next time.
Huzzah!
Bye!
Yeah!